bourbon, and beyond. A celebration of the spirit and soul of Kentucky. September 23rd and 24th in Louisville. The world's top bourbons, paired with celebrity chefs, Louisville's top restaurants, and iconic musicians. Featuring the voice behind Fleetwood Mac, Stevie Nicks. Just like the wine we know. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Eddie Vedder. The Steve Miller Band. Also featuring Joe Bonamassa, Band of Horses, Gary Clark Jr., Amos Lee, Buddy Guy, Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Chris Robinson Brotherhood, Paul Rogers. Celebrity chef appearances from Tom Colicchio. Over 20 of Louisville's top restaurants, curated by Chef Edward Lee. For the full list of artists, chefs, food, bourbons, and tickets, head to bourbonandbeyond.com. For our love of bourbon, for our love of Kentucky, Bourbon and Beyond. Get your tickets on sale now.
This is Redefining the Counterculture on Witten Radio. Make sure to check out our website at wittenradio.com.
You're listening to another episode of Redefining the Counterculture right here on Witten Radio. Today we've got a special guest for you. We're joined by singer-songwriter Janie Street. Janie, how's it going?
Pretty good. How's it going for you?
Hey, it's going well. It's going well. I can't complain. It's great to have you on today's show.
Yes, thanks a lot. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. So, Janie, you've actually been really, really busy. You've been working on a lot of stuff, and you've got an upcoming show on the 14th in Nashville, and so you've been really busy. I was wondering for our listening audience if you could kind of tell us what you've been working on.
Well, I got signed a while back, not that well, a couple of years ago, to Blue Lawn Records. Actually, the guy that signed me sorted me out from, I had a hit, you know, a few things happening in the 80s, and he was a big fan of mine, and he started Blue Lawn Records, who's become a very hip indie label, and anyway, but he sorted me out and asked me, you know, offered me a record deal, and I took it, and I put out one record called My Side of Paradise, and that won best the LA Music Critic Awards for Best CD of 2016, so it was kind of thrilling. And I was very proud of it. And then my new record, which is called In My Own Skin, is coming out June 23rd.
Wow. So this is a pretty big month for you. I mean, it's a month of just newness and just almost like rebirth because you've got so much going on.
This is a very busy month for me.
Absolutely. Now, Janie, you've been involved with music for quite some time, since your childhood. Tell me, I guess, what keeps you, I guess, involved in music and making music? Was there ever a point in time where you felt like you were just kind of over your head, just, like you were just kind of fed up with making music?
Well, let me explain this. I've never, ever been fed up with making music. I've been fed up with the music business, which is two different things, although they're really kind of related, unfortunately. So, I mean, you know, we all of us artists and songwriters and musicians, you know, we all have to deal with the business end of things, and it's a very difficult business. It's really crazy, really, to tell you the truth, and it's crazy making as well. So one has to find their sanity in order to keep their creative juices going and still try to make a living at this, and that's the hard part, you know. That's the really hard part, and I've just managed, I don't know, to tell you the truth, to be honest with everybody, I always tell them, I said, look, the reason why I just keep writing songs and keep doing music is because I just don't know how to do anything else. I kind of got stuck with it. That's the real honest truth. And I'm a hard worker, and of course I'm very passionate about my music, and I just put up with all the music business stuff. And, you know, there's been a lot of disappointments, a lot of highs, a lot of lows, a lot of exciting. You know, I wouldn't trade all the years that I've been doing this, I wouldn't trade it for anything, even though it's been very, very difficult at times, and more times than great, you know what I mean? The lows have been more than the highs, actually. But I still wouldn't trade it. I've lived an interesting life. I've met a lot of interesting, great people. you know, and then there's the, you know, the people that are there for when you're doing well and then they're gone when you're not and blah, 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 you know. It's like that song, you know, Once I Had a Laugh of a Millionaire.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're so right. You had, by the age of 19, you had something like 3 record deals. How did you choose, I guess, how did you pick what was, I know, what was like best for you? Because I know, being at that age, I can speak for myself, you know, it's kind of hard making decisions and deciding, you know, what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. I mean, but you handled it so well. How were you able to kind of pick out what was best for you at that age?
Well, it was very simple. To tell you the truth, it just sort of fell in my lap. I didn't go after record deals. I had a best friend that at 14 years old had a major hit called Society's Child, my friend Janice Ian, which some of your younger listeners will not know who she is, but some people might. And she's still around playing, and she, you know, she's part of the folk scene pretty much. But anyway, so she was my buddy, and we were both 14, and we were both writing songs. And I had a band in Queens called Operation Blues, and we were working every week. And, I mean, I was already working all the time. And through her and her, you know, attorney and manager, me and the piano player in the band hooked up and started writing songs as a duet. And this was during the time when the folk rock scene was happening. And so we went from Operation Blues playing around Queens to sort of writing songs, and Janice had heard it, and she turned her people onto it, and boom, 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 we just got a deal with Warner Brothers like when we were still in high school. So it really just sort of like everything just sort of fell into place, and it was kind of cool because, again, back then I couldn't do anything else very well except that.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, okay, well, all right, at least I can have a future in the music business because I've got a record deal. And then we got dropped, and then we got another deal with Capitol, and we toured with the Bee Gees, and we, you know, this was back when, and you know, we toured with Melanie, was a very international star at the time. So we were a big opening act, and we opened up all over the East Coast and the club scene. So Dennis, it was called Janie and Dennis. We just had a simple name. It was our names. And we were like a couple, and we were very good looking. And we did some great stuff. We really, really had some great music. But we broke up, and that was the end of that. And then, I had another boyfriend and for a while. I've lived in New York. I grew up in New York, and this is all my New York days. And then I moved to Hermosa Beach in L.A. And I ended up getting signed with Clive Davis in the 80s. As a solo artist. So that's that, you know, those are the series of events, you know, the way that they fell together, basically. I just started working like at a young age, and I didn't really make any decisions about it. I took the opportunities, and it was what I wanted to do with my life. So it really wasn't a decision. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now the music landscape has changed so much. You know, we spoke, you know, just about labels and, you know, kind of how you had to, you know, make a decision on what you wanted to do and everything else. But, you know, nowadays with technology, it's like as an artist, you don't really have to wait on a record label or a contract. You can really get your head start, you know, right on your own. How do you feel as an artist yourself that has so many years of experience, how do you feel about overall about just the way that technology has kind of evolved and changed the landscape of music?
Well, there's a lot of levels, okay? The level of that anybody could go ahead and use a computer and some drum machines and make a record and put it out there has saturated the market. So in that way, you know, there are a lot of talented people that do that kind of stuff, and there's a lot of very untalented people that do that kind of stuff, and everybody wants to be a star. So it's made it very tough for, you know, for the cream of the thing to rise. You know what I mean? It's just too much stuff going on. And but the technology in terms of the studio and the technology in terms of, like, the tools that we have to make great records is great. I mean, nobody's going to argue with that. But you can't totally depend, I mean, on a creative level. You know, you have to do great stuff. You have to write great songs, or compose great music for film and TV or whatever you're doing in a studio setup. you know, just because you have great gear or computers that can, you know, Pro Tools or whatever you're going to use, programs to, you know, to make things sound good and tune people's vocals and stuff like that. And if you don't have the real stuff, it's still not going to come across, even if you have the technology. So that's my feeling. Then there's the other side of it. The other side of it is a side of it a lot of people are not aware of, but the technology in songwriting, with how it's affected the tech companies like Apple and Google and everything like that, have all taken over the streaming business. And songwriters do not get paid for their, I mean, they get paid such a little amount of money. I mean, I have friends that have had millions of plays on Spotify, and they got a $50 check. So
what?
We're going through a horrible time. There are people that have had major hit records that are losing their houses. The songwriting community is just, and publishing community is just going through a horrible time, and we're all down in Washington fighting for other legislation. This is very complicated. Very complicated because the old rules don't apply. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And so the copyright owners in the music business are really suffering from this and trying to change it. I'm very involved. I'm not involved with that. I'm just involved with an organization. I do a lot of teaching and mentoring with the National Songwriters Association. And they're one of the big players, along with ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, that are running down to Washington and trying to get different kind of legislation so that we can get paid for people using our music. People, it's become so disposable, like people just don't want to pay for music anymore. So it's very hard to make a living in the music business unless you're Lady Gaga. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's the technology rap in a nutshell.
Yeah. You're right, Jenny. You're so right. And it's really scary because it's like, you know, you're right. It's almost like people don't want to pay for music any longer, which is horrible because, you know, it's an art like anything else. And, you know, you should be appreciative of it. You know, it's.
Really. It is. It's really difficult. It's just so, you know, I mean, it's just sort of the way things, you know, look, To give you some perspective on this, you know, when sheet music was around back in the old Tin Pan Alley days, right? And then recording, they started having radio, right? Well, they had to go through a whole thing down in Washington to change, and, you know, Cole Porter was very involved in developing ASCAP and starting to fight with legislation down in Washington to get money for using songs on broadcasting, with broadcasting. So, you know, it's the same thing, except this is a longer battle and more complicated, I would say. You know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. I wanted to ask you, I know that you have done so much touring just throughout the years. You know, even today you're touring. When you head out, before you head out on the road, is there any, I guess, any pre-tour rituals that you have that kind of help to take the edge off, so to speak?
What do you mean? You mean to just get me, you know, well, I go to the gym and I work out so I can hold up.
Okay.
That's what you're asking.
Yeah, I didn't know if you had any weird rituals or anything, like, where you, I don't know.
I'm a ritual kind of person. Like, I like my coffee in the morning. I go to the gym. I have a lot of little routines, you know, but I mean, I don't do yoga and all that stuff, and I don't meditate. I really probably should, but I'm such a New Yorker, I don't even know how to meditate. I mean, I don't know. I'm just too wound up, I guess. I don't know. I work out at the gym, and I eat really healthy because, it is pressure. I mean, it's a lot of pressure, and I work, you know, I do a lot of mentoring as well in between touring and in between records, and, you know, and so. You know, I'm always working, and it's always music, and it's great, but it's still work, you know. So, you know, I have to take some time out sometimes to just chill, you know. And I love chilling. You just have to pace yourself, you know, that's it. And that's it. You have to really learn how to pace yourself. And I try the best I can, you know.
Absolutely. And speaking of you being a New Yorker, how do you like living in Nashville? I know that it must be a big change for you, you know, being down south here and just, you know, things are a lot more slower paced, so to speak. But how do you like it down here so far?
Well, I really, actually, I grew up in New York and spent a lot of my young adulthood in New York, and then I moved to the beach in California, and that was really great. And things, I was doing a lot of, you know, it was in between record deals, and I was doing a lot of film and TV songs. Writing and getting things in film and TV, which was really cool. At the time, wasn't as competitive as it is now. And I was actually doing pretty well, and then it sort of dried up. And so a friend of mine brought me here to co-write with all these great writers, and I took a trip here, and I just fell in love with the songwriting community here. And then there were certain things going on with the place I was living with at the beach. I mean, it was really changing and getting very expensive, and it was much easier to live here. And I had the whole creative community here, and right, you know, it wasn't like L.A. where everybody's spread out all over the place. Everything's right here. So I sort of ended up just sort of – my music has just sort of made decisions for me. It sort of just took me here. So, you know, I hang out with a lot of people that are Southerners, you know, that are creative people, and then I hang out with a lot of people. There are a lot of people here from L.A. and New York and all over Canada, I mean, that are in the music community, and those are mostly the people I deal with. And then some of the other regular folks that I deal with have been really cool. I mean, you know, the South, you know, there's certain things about it that, I don't know, it is slower. I mean, when I go to the grocery store and I'm online, it's like my typical New Yorker thing. The woman is just like handing one thing at a time. I'll say to them, I'll stand there, and of course, you know, being me, I'll just go, hello.
Hey, I mean, I can't
blame you. So I get the little subtle moments where my fast-paced New Yorker comes out, you know, in the South. It's funny.
Absolutely. Now I know that you know, like, you are a New Yorker, and you know, you're still, you know, there's parts of you that, you know, still kind of like are trying to get this Southern thing down. But I see that you've done a lot of work with the Nashville Songwriters Association, which is huge. Tell me what it was like for you on a personal level, just, you know, mentoring young writers and conducting workshops.
I found it extremely rewarding, and I've met the coolest people. I did it. I really was doing it all over the country for all their chapters. I was doing a specialized workshop on how to write songs for film and TV, because I actually have a pretty good track record with that. And it was the beginning of people getting interested in wanting to not write so much for Nashville, because it was too competitive, and trying to get placements in film and TV, because that is a market that you can still make money in. So, do you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I was hearing funny noises. Anyway, so, yeah, so I like teaching a lot. I really do. It's very fulfilling for me, and I still do some mentoring for Nashville Songwriters. I'm very close to the organization and involved, and, you know, they're a great organization. I would encourage anybody out there that's listening to check it out, that's interested in moving up the chain. I mean, I'll tell you, there's a lot of people that became members of Nashville Songwriters Association and went through the evaluation system and went through the mentoring thing that have become major hit writers because they got the right kind of advice. So, I mean, you know, it doesn't mean just because you joined Nashville Songwriters Association you're going to become a hit writer. I'm just saying that they've come up the chain through that organization, you know, quite a bit. So I would encourage people. For sure.
Absolutely. Tell me about, I know that in 2015, the owner of Blue Alon, the record label, he called you, his name's Kirk, and he offered you a new record deal. That must have been really inspiring and just...
I was in shock.
Shock, yeah. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, I really was. Well, I just wasn't looking for a record deal, and I really wasn't. I mean, I just, you know, it was mostly, you know, if you're 20, you're too old to get a record deal. So I'm way past that, let's just say. And I was a little surprised, and it was cool. And I said, yeah, and you know, we put our little deal together, and I made a great record. I'm very proud of. Like I said, it won the LA Music Critic Awards for Best CD 2016, and I did my second record, like I said, and it's coming out the 23rd of June, and I'm really excited about it and see where that takes me. That'll be the next stage of this. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I want to kind of go back a little bit. You were almost a protege of Clive Davis, and he's a legend in the music industry. What was it like, I guess, just being able to sit up under him and to learn from him and kind of, you know, learn your way into the business? What was it like for you?
Well, I had already been in the business. So, you know, basically, I work with a very, very good producer who actually got me signed up with Clive. And so, you know, I really, Clive was great. I enjoyed meeting him. We had a really great rapport. I was really working with the New York office of Arista Records at the time, and they were all a bunch of great people. It really, really dug me. I mean, I thought it was interesting because, you know, these people, like, they're the same people that shut the door in your face if you're a nobody and they don't know who you are. But when you're an artist on the label, it's like everybody's, like, almost afraid of you. And I remember, you know, observing that, like, all the people I was dealing with, like, were kind of nervous around me because I was, you know, signed to the label, Clive and all that. And I used to say, what's the problem? And, you know, I was so nice. They said, you're so nice. Like, and I said, well, how are the other artists? Are they mean? What's the story? Because I really am just a regular person, you know. I'm just not into, like, the power trips and the, you know, I'm just like somebody that, you know, hung out with the secretaries there. What can I say? I mean, you know, I mean, that's where my head's at. I'm like just a real, real person. And I just am not, you know, I never got into this to be a star. I just got in it for the music, you know. But Clive was great to work with. He made me do a lot of vocals over and over again and then ended up using the first one I did. He was really cool, and it was a very good experience. You know, unfortunately, they dropped me, but they liked me. But something that was going on corporate-wise that had nothing to do with me because I actually was doing very well. I had a hit video. I had a hit song under the clock, and it was very unusual, and I still don't really know what it was, but it's some kind of corporate thing, whatever. I don't know. But it was great working with Clive.
Absolutely. What would you say, I guess, were some of the biggest life lessons that you've gotten just in regards to being in the industry and being, you know, a musician as not just a part of your living, but your lifestyle? What would you say is, like, the biggest life lesson that you've taken away from the songs?
The biggest life lesson? Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's many life lessons, so I don't know how to hone in on one. I mean, help me here. I would just say that, you know, that I've had to struggle with I've had to struggle with feeling like a success even if I wasn't making a lot of money. I had to separate, a lot of people don't realize this, but, you know, the music business is very difficult, and, you know, you could have even a successful record and successful, and you could do good work and not make money. So I guess what it is finding, you know, feeling like I've had, as opposed to success in making money, and I think in any field that you're in as a professional-like person, I'm lucky because I was just brought up by parents that were not materialistic, okay? So I'm not materialistic. So the money is not the thing that motivates me. Of course, I mean, you know, I want to be able to pay my bills, right? But
right.
I'm not motivated by fame and money at all. So, but if I'm not doing well and you know, and I'm struggling, which I have a lot of the time, I could start to feel like my life isn't successful. And I guess what I'm saying is I do, no matter what happens at this point, I've learned how to say my life has been successful. You know what I mean? Even if I'm not famous or I'm not making $1 million. I think that everybody who's doing this, who's really talented and, you know, just keeps working at it, should feel that their success lies in their life and the way that they live it and the way that they do their music and how they work on it. And I think that that's a really important thing when you're in my position or in everybody that's trying to, you know, to have some success in this business with their music so that they could pay their bills, or that even if they want more than that, which they, you know, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. No.
More than that. That's not, you know, I don't know. A lot of people are motivated in different ways that are talented and work hard at this. I just, you know, but my motivate, but for me, it's always been, hey, I got to pay my bills and I've got to make music. That is, and that's success to me.
Absolutely. You hit on some really good things there, Janie, because you said, you know, don't measure success by, you know, the amount of money that you make or the notoriety that you gain from, you know, doing a certain thing. But, you know, just by happiness and by, you know, just the work that you do, have pride in the work that you do. And that, I mean, you really hit on something there, because it's like you, I mean, it is so easy to get caught up in, hey, I'm doing this radio station, I'm not a millionaire. Hey, you know, I'm playing in this band, I'm not a millionaire. Hey, I'm, you know, like, you get caught up in the monetary things. And I think, like, that, you know, leads to a lot of unhappiness and anxiety. But I think if you can just relax in knowing who you are and just taking pride in the work that you do, you know, essentially you'll be a lot happier, you know, and you'll feel successful. You know,
right? Well, you know, a lot of these songwriters here in this whole community has been hit hard by this copyright problem and the technology and the streaming business, you know, and so everybody's taken a big hit financially and everybody has tried to a lot of songwriters, okay, and artists here that are working, you know, in this national community that's a close-knit creative community, everybody's taken a big hit in the music business. I mean, it's just hit everybody. And so, you know, but the dedicated musicians and the dedicated songwriters, you know, even if they take a hit, they just keep doing it. You know what I mean? They keep doing it and they find ways to bring in income with their music. A lot of people are teaching. A lot of people are playing on the road that we're just doing sessions here because there's not as many sessions. You know what I mean? In other words, everybody, like, you know, adjusts. You know what I'm saying? And they keep playing their music. You know what I'm saying? That's the most important thing.
Absolutely. No, you're so right. You're so right. What do you think what do you think is the solution, or what will it take to fix this issue with the copyright, bill that's been taking place? I know that it's been a thorn in the side of many musicians, including yourself. What can be done to remedy this situation?
Well, that's a very complicated issue that I don't really quite understand, but they are – all I know is that it has to be – it's really complicated. I just know that they're working on – changing the licensing laws so that these tech companies have to pay more money to stream. You know what I mean? That's the
right.
Streaming is what's killing us. And that's
yeah.
The fight. Now, how they're going about it and exactly how I don't know. I really don't know. Another thing is the downloads and stuff. People just buy songs. They don't buy whole records anymore. So if you're a songwriter and you get, you know, let's say, you know, you're a songwriter that's doing outside, you know, somebody like Reba McEntire or somebody like George Strait, right? They do a record, they do an album, and they don't write everything themselves, right? So you're a songwriter and a lot of big stars don't write all their own songs. You know what I mean? So if you're a songwriter and you're just trying to get cuts, it's less. There's no album cuts anymore because people aren't buying CDs. They're just buying downloads, and they're just buying one song or a single. So it's squeezed everybody that way too. You know what I mean? From what it used to be.
Yes, absolutely. You're so right. Yeah, the streaming model, it definitely has to change. I think, you know, until it changes and until there can be some legislation that's, you know, passed – you know, I think artists are going to suffer, unfortunately. And
yeah, I mean, the most, you know, people are making the most money on merchandise, on tour, and that's really, you know, and film and TV sinks. I mean, that's basically where the money's at, and it's just really difficult. It's just a very difficult time in the music business right now, and I don't know. I'm just putting out these records and, you know, doing my thing, and I don't think about it too much. And like I said, you adjust and you just keep going.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're so right. What is it that you love the most about touring? I know that you do quite a lot of touring. What would you say is it the thing that you love the most about being on tour?
Well, I don't like the schlepping, but I do like performing. So, you know, I would say that my favorite thing about being on tour is playing live for people and having them really get to know my music and me.
I love it. And I see here that you've got an L.A. date coming up, on the 20th as well, and then on the 24th and 25th, I believe, you're back home in New York City.
The Cutting Room is 28th is my big CD release party. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. That must be a good feeling, you know, being able to go back, you know, to be able to head home. Tell me, you know, what you're most looking forward to with that show.
I am looking forward to it because for some reason I was in New York doing workshops like 5 years ago and doing some house concerts in the Northeast, but I really am looking forward to this show because it's going to be we're doing it as a like sort of a Blue Elan, doing it with two other artists on my label that are opening up to me and, you know, playing acoustic kind of. And we're also doing this as a benefit for the Gilda Club. And the Gilda Club is an cancer support group organization that I have, you know, have connected with in the past because I have had lost family members to cancer. And so they're an organization that I want to get behind. And so so we've attached this to being a benefit, like a Janie Street CD release party / Gilda Club benefit. So it's not and I have a great New York band lined up, and we're going to just rock out, and it's going to be a wonderful thing.
Hey, can't beat that.
No, it's really, you know, it's great because it's not just a CD release party and like me, everybody check me out. It's like we're able to do something good with it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Janie, what is the biggest thing that you want, I guess, in terms of legacy, when you leave it all behind, what is the biggest thing that you want to be said about you, about your music? What is it that you want to convey about your music to the world?
That's a good question. I don't really know. I mean, because I'm not, you know, it's funny. I just don't see, I don't know. I'm somebody that sort of just does it. And it's like, it's so natural for me to do my music. And I just don't know. I mean, it's a funny thing that I just don't understand people's perception of my music. I think that I'm hoping they like it, and I know that they do. And I know that that I talk about a lot of stuff that people can relate to. So I guess, you know, I hope that, you know, if I was to, you know, drop dead tomorrow, you know, the records that I've just made and some of the stuff that I've done in the past, you know, means something that gives joy and comfort or whatever, or just things that people could relate to and sort of feel less alone. I mean, I think that that's what the goal is to have your listener. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be Lady Gaga and have a million listeners, even if it's just, you know, a small amount of listeners. Whoever's listening, who's ever, you know, listens to it after I leave the planet, it makes them feel less alone. That's what I'd like to leave behind.
I love it. I think that's amazing. You know, I mean, that, yeah, because at the end of the day, it's like we're all on this planet. We all want to be loved. We all want to connect with people. And at the end of the day, we don't want to feel alone. And so I think that what you said there is really, really powerful.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought about it, but now that you asked, I guess that's, you know, I think that's the goal of any good songwriter, an artist, that their song makes somebody feel less alone, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Janie, where can our listening audience find out more about you and keep abreast of what you're doing?
Excuse me?
Where can our listening audience find out more about you and keep abreast of what you're doing?
Well, they could go to Facebook, Janie Street, and it's spelled J-A-N-E-Y, not I-E. So just remember the E-Y, and you'll find me, my fan page on Facebook, and also janiestreet.com, J-A-N-E-Y-S-T-R-E-E-T.com.
I love it. I love it. Janie,
and they could get on my once they get on my site, they could join my email list and all of that. And I have a fan club, personal fan club that they could join. It's all there. Everything's there. And the new release when it comes out will be there. Right now, if you want to, you could go to Blue Lawn Records and pre-order my record and get a free download of the record right now plus 4 bonus tracks, and then you'll get a CD as well on the 23rd. After the 23rd, when it's technically released. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. Hey, that's a good deal.
It sure is. For bonus tracks, too.
Yeah, that is. That is a good deal. I'll say that.
Yeah. So,
I just wanted to say thank you so much. I'm all out of questions, but I wanted to open the floor to you if there's anything you'd like to say to our listening audience.
Well, yeah, thanks for listening, and check out my music if you haven't already, and I'm hoping you dig it.
Awesome, awesome. We will do just that, Janie, and, we love the work that you're doing. We're excited for the Nashville show. Of course, that's close here to our studios, and so we are looking forward to that show. That's at the Bluebird Cafe, and we'll put the links to your website in the body of this post. If you guys are listening to us on SoundCloud, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. We're also on your iOS device. If you've got an iPhone of any kind or an iPad, you can download the Stitcher Smart Radio app. It's available for free. Download the app, search for our show name, Redefining the Counterculture. You'll hear this interview with Janie. We're also available for Android users. If you've got an Android phone or Android device, go to the Google Play Store, search Google Play Music, search for our show name. You can download this interview. Lastly, we're available on Roku. If you've got a Roku player or a Roku smart television, you can watch our show right in the privacy of your own home. We've got over 200-plus hours of original content, programming, and interviews, all free of charge.
Bourbon and Beyond, a celebration of the spirit and soul of Kentucky. September 23rd and 24th in Louisville, the world's top bourbons, paired with celebrity chefs, Louisville's top restaurants, and iconic musicians, featuring the voice behind Fleetwood Mac, Stevie Nicks. Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Eddie Vedder. The Steve Miller Band. Also featuring Joe Bonamassa, Band of Horses, Gary Clark Jr., Amos Lee, Buddy Guy, Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Chris Robinson Brotherhood, Paul Rogers. Celebrity chef appearances from Tom Colicchio. Over 20 of Louisville's top restaurants, curated by Chef Edward Lee. For the full list of artists, chefs, food, bourbons, and tickets, head to bourbonandbeyond.com. For our love of bourbon, for our love of Kentucky, Bourbon and Beyond. Get your tickets on sale now.